You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of packets and bits, but of security. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of tinfoil hats and unicorns. Your next stop, the Healthy Paranoia Zone. Welcome to the show. Today we'll be exploring packets flying through the air. That's right, wireless. We're going to try to get practical and demystify the issues surrounding 802.11 security. With me on the journey is the esteemed fellow packet pusher and ever snarky Mr. Greg Farrow. Take a bow, Greg. Okay, I guess he's
taking
a bow.
Things you say to me, the things you say about me, I mean, what the hell? Well, I'm going to be probably quiet and reserved today because after 3 days of vendor presentations and consequential alcohol consumption during the network field day here in San Jose, there's really not much of me left inside. I'm becoming subhuman, I think. Despite regular washings in the hot tub down here in the hotel, I haven't quite washed all of the vendor stink off. It's starting to come off. I think I've got these new growths of vendor glomp on me.
Also, on the guest list today, we have esteemed security researchers Thomas Dutrep, whose name I can never say properly because he's Belgian, author of Aircrack NG, and first-time Mike Kershaw, author of Kismet, who I've been trying to get on the show forever. Rounding out the group will be Blake Crone, host of the excellent wireless podcast No Strings Attached, and Andrew Van Nagy. Is that correct?
Van Nagy. Is the correct pronunciation.
Van Nage. Oh, you and Thomas will have to, you know, be in the pretentious corner, I think.
Battle of the last names.
Van Nage. I shop at Target.
And Andrew is a well-known blogger at Revolution Wi-Fi, an excellent site. Well, I think we actually may have exceeded our CCIE quota today as well. Because we have Greg, Andrew, and Blake, right?
Yep.
Yep. Wow.
It's I'm semi-retired, though.
Emeritus waiting to be?
Yeah, no, I am emeritus, but that just means I'm too lazy to go back for the refresher exam.
Well, so we're all here to talk about wireless security. I wanted to have the show, well... I sort of have an ulterior motivation here. We're doing a wireless rollout where I work, and I wanted sort of to go over all the hit the high points and go over all the big issues with wireless security, and there are many. I mean, it just makes, I'm sure it makes Mike and Thomas just all warm and fuzzy inside, right?
It's good fodder for the media, right?
Yeah.
The worst Wi-Fi question I've ever seen was a question that said, how do we set up a web network for our insulin pumps?
I've heard that a few times. I have. That is something I've heard quite a few times working in hospitals.
Oh, no.
And a little part of me died inside that day.
Aren't we past WEP yet, please?
No, yet. We're not. That's sad, as so many client devices still support it.
Oh,
and only support
no.
it.
What are we doing? Can't we just immolate that on a big, you know, kind of pyre to you know, a big funeral pyre? Can't it just go away? Bury it at sea? I don't know.
The Wi-Fi Alliance tried to do something like that, I believe, was it a year ago or so? And they got tons of pushback, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so first on the show notes, everyone, WEP bad. No more WEP. You will lose your honorary ability to participate in packet pushers if you're still doing WEP. Agreed?
Here, I second that motion.
Okay, yeah. Carried.
Carried.
Make it so. WEP bad, peoples. WEP bad.
We need to come up with, like, an obnoxious, you know, alternate acronym for WEP. Then nobody will want to do it, you know?
Wimpy Evil Protocol?
Yeah, okay.
Wicked Evil Protocol?
Wireless equals Pwn?
Oh, I like that one.
There you go.
Oh, I'll put that on the show notes.
That's a good one.
Oh, see, somebody's putting it in the show notes right now. Thank you. Mike is so helpful. I love that. What a good guest. So, yeah. So, wireless, we all know, right? Hopefully all the listeners know that wireless is a shared medium, right? It's like, wow, 1998 called. You're back there. It's a shared medium, so everything old is new again. All the great old attacks, you get to recycle them for wireless, right?
Hold on. The original standard came out in 1997, so I think this is perfectly reasonable.
Very good.
Angie's got a point there.
That's fair. Yes, very good point. So can we talk about some of the great, awesome attacks out there?
Jamming.
Yeah.
That's the easiest one.
I know, but there's no elegance to jamming. I mean, that's just... Are you going to put lots of links up for where people can buy jammers?
Oh, that's built-in cards for FCC testing. Cards need to have that kind of thing, 100% use on the channel to see how they behave. So that's a mode all cards have. And with some drivers, they let you use that mode.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ever for Prism 2 on Linux, that would just it would just turn on full transmit, and boy, it got hot. I actually burned myself on a card, and it never really worked right again.
You were the card.
The card.
Okay.
Well, we know Mike has never been right, so...
I was going to say, arguably, I never worked right again either.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have, like, the brute force kind of thing, jamming. I mean, technically you're not. That's a violation of FCC regulations, right?
Yeah.
Jamming. You're not really supposed to do that. It's only for testing, and I'm doing air quotes. Don't, like, kick me out of packet pushers for that. But we have some better ones. For example, we've got the ARP poisoning, right? I mean, Thomas, does Aircrack do some ARP poisoning or?
No, it does ARP replay.
Oh, even nicer, a little more elegant. Can you talk about that?
Basically, it finds a ARP that is floating in the air. There are some ways to recognize an ARP, even if it's encrypted. There's some stuff you can see in the frame, and as soon as you recognize one, you can use it and. Send it all the time, so very fast. And if you're on the box that is on the access point as being ARP replayed, you can really clearly see that you see lots of ARP.
So cool.
With the TCP dump, yeah.
Cool.
So it's very noisy on the network.
Mike, what do you like to do? What's your favorite ARP kind of... nonsense.
Actually, in around 2004, I think it was, someone wrote Airpone and brought it to DEF CON. And what Airpone does is it hijacks TCP sessions, and they replaced every web page at DEF CON that year with Goatsy. And I saw a fantastic video of it in action where a man opens his laptop and types a URL and gets a very sad look on his face and closes his laptop and then opens it again and tries again and then just gives it. But the interesting thing that everybody overlooked about that attack when it came out was that it's full TCP session hijacking. The only reason TCP sessions are secure is they start with some big random number. And someone on the internet can't guess that. But if they're on your layer 2 Wi-Fi network next to you, they can totally guess that. Which means anything that you can race and hijack the TCP stream on, you can do interesting things to. So it opens up a world, it opens up everything to interesting attacks.
Well, it's interesting because you basically have two kinds of attacks, two categories. You know, you've got just... the denial of service type of attack. My favorite being MDK3. I love that because it's just, it's like a sledgehammer. It's Thor's hammer. just coming down, or, you know, and jamming, or you've got man-in-the-middle type hijacking attacks. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of oversimplifying it, but yeah. So why don't we talk about a little bit about the difference between so Aircrack NG, which is Thomas's sort of suite, that has some brute force tools, some things like that, mm-hmm. and yours is mostly reconnaissance, I would guess. Is that fair, or?
Yeah, Kismet is almost entirely passive. In fact, I think unless you install some plugins, it's 100% passive. There's some integration of some of the Aircrack code for anti-web stuff, but it only uses packets it captured. I don't include the parts of Aircrack that the parts of Aircrack that inject packets to accelerate it. So it's just an opportunistic guess at web. It's just so cheap to do, it doesn't hurt trying.
That's true.
Then there's also some more hostile code that I contributed to Metasploit, which is an updated version of Airpwn and some DNS attacks and whatnot over Wi-Fi.
So, Thomas, what are some of the more naughty parts of Aircrack NG that you have?
One of the naughty parts is, like, you can create a fake WP access point.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, to attack clients, so you only need the client. The tool is called Airbase, so you can create a fake soft access point. We'll just initiate the handshake and never finish, but that's more than enough to crack the handshake.
And you have a WPA brute force tool, is that correct? Isn't that integrated into your toolkit?
It's not really brute force, because brute force is not really possible with WPA. It's way too CPU intensive, mm-hmm. and the minimum length of a passphrase is like 8 characters. You take all the alphanumerical characters, mm-hmm. all the possibilities, is even that for 8 characters is going to take a very, very, very long time. So it's almost impossible.
Yours is a dictionary then?
Yeah. One thing you can do is just profile your target, know what it likes. There are lots of different tools to generate your dictionary. Yeah.
So Blake, Andrew, in your experience, do you guys utilize Kismet and Aircrack NG either as troubleshooting or even reconnaissance tools for when you're looking at a network, or do you use them to put the fear of God into your clients? I mean, what's your experience with using these suites?
Well, back in the day, back when I was in college, I actually converted a Linksys WRT54G access point with a GPS modem, an SD card, and then console port access on it, and made it so that anytime it started running, all it did is it just fired up Kismet and started logging all the wireless networks. So when I was, you know, the term that everybody hated, war driving, back in the early 2000s, you know, essentially that's what I was doing, but it was to figure out kind of like trends in the wireless networking around the U of M campus in Minneapolis where I went to school. It was to see what actually, you know, what's the adoption rate of wireless? What's the adoption rate of the different security protocols? And then it was kind of a fun, like you said, reconnaissance tool just to see what's out there and what's going on. But Kismet also is a great tool, yeah, to put some of the fear of God into some people, because you can pull it up. You can launch it. The number one thing I hate is when somebody says, "Oh, I don't want to broadcast the SSID because I don't want to give away who I am."
Okay, is that okay? Do you hate that worse? Do you hate that worse than when I say WAP?
I do. So drink, everybody. She just said WAP. So it's nice because you can fire up the tools like Kismet and you can show them that, okay, this isn't something that you're actually putting security in by not broadcasting it. It's just that Windows is dumb and doesn't tell you what it is, but I can still find it easy enough. And I think an interesting point on that is that when the tools were first released back when, you know, it's sad to say that it's almost been, what, nine years, 10 years plus, it was a little bit harder to do because we didn't have things such as Backtrack, which you can just download as a bootable, you know, thumb drive and fire up a Linux platform that has all these tools for the script kiddies to use.
Yeah, so it's yeah, I love
nobody always tells me this is the advanced people. The advanced people are doing this. Advanced people are doing it. No, unfortunately, it's not. It's people that are just smart enough to know how to Google.
Okay, yeah. funny story. I'm on an airplane coming back from the previous network field day, and I'm looking around. I'm playing around on the wireless. The high school kid next to me says, "Can you break into that? Can you show me how?" I went, dude, chill out. Don't do that. You'll get in trouble. I mean, he wasn't even a computer geek. He was going to look at colleges with his dad. I think he was doing neural engineering. That was going to be his major. But he still wanted to have... I mean... So I just showed him the Aircrack NG and Kismet websites, and I said, I want to know. Just don't tell me.
Yeah, Michelle, I think, you know, what we find today, mainly my use for those tools is to show how a properly secured enterprise network can be set up and highlight the holes, because today I think, you know, it's virtually impossible to hack the encryption with WPA2, either personal when done correctly, and we can get through what correctly means, or enterprise with 802.1x and dynamic keying. It's virtually impossible to hack the encryption itself. You know, we're to the point now where we're highlighting vulnerabilities in implementation and sidejacking type of attacks, where we're relying on social networking, getting a pre-shared key that, you know, we shouldn't have, or hacking the client in some way to get then a foothold into the network and expand further. So, you know, I think when we talk hacking, I think there's two things you can talk about there. You can talk about actually, you know, trying to break the encryption or doing some other type of vulnerability to find a hole in the implementation.
Agreed. I think it's great that I find Kismet and Aircrack NG of infinite usefulness, and what's great is they use these suites in teaching the CWNP classes. So you guys are rock stars already for the CWNP suite of classes and different certifications. And I think they're good tools, and you know, if people, I was a little in shock. I still see people trying to use NetStumbler and stuff, or iStumbler. I'm thinking, guys, come on.
By the way, one of the greatest WIP signatures of all time, if you go into any WIP system, is detect the presence of NetStumbler. Why is that a WIP signature? Why do I care if somebody's looking at what networks are out and available? I don't care. It shouldn't be a WIP signature. I find it funny when people put on RFPs and stuff, must be able to detect NetStumbler and stuff like that. It's just...
That might actually kind of be my fault, because that was one of the things I put in Kismet way at the beginning. But at that point, with some Orinoco cards, which are the most popular ones, NetStumbler would actually spew out a couple of very strange probe packets that you could fingerprint as being, this only came from NetStumbler.
So is that more, then it became a WIP signature just so that you could mock somebody?
Well, I think in the old days, right, it's like not many people were aware of tools like that,
right.
And wireless was fairly new, and so if somebody was using it, you know, it more than likely somebody was advanced and knew what they were doing. But like Blake said, today everybody's just, you know, it's so easy to use tools like that that it's just more common.
So
that was exactly it. I had back then, you know, someone near you was running NetStumbler. That was an interesting fact.
Yeah.
There were also even fingerprints that I'd put in Kismet in the IDS system that would detect if someone was probing for networks and never joining one. Because you'd never encounter someone just looking for networks that wasn't connecting to the network in 2003 or 2000.
Exactly. That was your first red flag.
Someone brought that up to me. Nowadays, someone brought that IDS alert up to me and said, "What was the point of this?" I'm like, "Well, it made sense once, not so much anymore."
Well, so let's segue into. Let's get one thing out of the way. Besides that, you're not supposed to call it a WAP. Oh, everybody drink! is there any use case in any part of the universe that you would ever, ever countenance unencrypted wireless and open SSID? Would you ever, ever think that's okay? Anyone?
An open network? Sure, guest.
I don't even think it should be unencrypted for guests, but I
tend to agree with Michelle on this one.
guess, you know, a very large retailer we worked with up in the cities here, and one of the things is that they had so many issues trying to get guests on, like, a pre-shared key network, or even they actually went as far as having an EAP network for this stuff, and it was too difficult to make sure that a person actually had administrator rights on their computer to be able to add an encrypted wireless network. It was bizarre, or like their drivers weren't up to date, so then they couldn't connect to the network because they're running 18-month-old drivers, which we all know causes issues in wireless if you're running really old drivers.
But Blake, I think you're highlighting a different problem. You're highlighting an ease of use problem, not a problem. I think open Wi-Fi is still a fundamental problem. We should have secure guest networks. But their challenge and the gap is to make that easy to use and intuitive and just seamless for users. Now, that's where the issue lies, and I think closing that gap is then what needs to happen. But fundamentally, I'm with Michelle that the reason we rely on open hotspots for guests today is because we don't have a better alternative that's usable. And once we have that, hopefully with Hotspot 2.0 and Next Gen Hotspot, it'll get a little bit better.
Yeah, but why do we care about a guest network being encrypted, though? Who cares what the guest is doing? It's the guest's own dang fault if they're doing something that they're not.
Don't you want to protect your guests from a brand image perspective? I mean, I used to work at a large retailer, and sure, the easiest way is to provide an open hotspot. But then what happens when your guests come in and say, well, I got hacked because your network is open? That becomes a brand image perspective, and you want to provide a secure access where you don't make vulnerabilities for your guests, and that could be tied back to you and be your fault. I mean, I think it's branding as well.
I threatened to impale myself at the EDU where I worked at. I said, I'm going to throw my bleeding body on top of the AP if you try and use unencrypted wireless. I thought it was actually immoral because knowing all the attacks out there, I just felt like it was my moral responsibility to protect the people. No matter how many disclaimers you put on your captive portal, nobody is going to really protect themselves. And then there are the SSL man-in-the-middle attacks that come out, like, you know, SSL Strip and Beast and Carnage now or something. I can't remember. I think that's the name. So I feel really strongly about it personally. I agree with Andrew. But I can see Blake's point. I mean, the problem is a lot of the clients out there, especially on the microcrap side, don't do it very well.
The biggest problem really is establishing the basis of trust for an open network. Because if you make it WPA PSK, well, anyone can spoof that and you're back at ground zero, since there's no AP authentication. If you make it certificate backed, then you have to get a user to install a certificate, have the rights to install a certificate, understand what they're doing, install the right certificate, and then compare it and look at a page of fingerprint data and figure out if they're doing it right.
And you know, I mean, this is the same problem we have with browsers, and browsers are still more advanced than wirelesses when it comes to automatic certificate validation. But with wireless, that's one of my key things with all these personal devices that are coming into enterprise now, is sure, we can do certificates and you can validate them, but that's a process and it's not easy, especially for users when they're trying to do it on their own. And with Wi-Fi, we need to get to a mature state where that certificate verification can happen automatically in the background and be tied to something that we can trust. And so I think today it's a very manual process, and that's where a lot of the problem comes in.
Well, and then there's the whole certificate issue. You know, do we trust certificates anymore? Do we trust content revocation lists? And, you know, do we want to, you know, I'm making recommendations that if we use certificates, to use self-signed, because I don't really trust certificate authorities anymore, external ones. Not for
absolutely. Absolutely.
And then they charge.
So many times in the last year, right?
Yeah, and then look at what they charge for an organization. It's absurd.
And for Radius, you don't want a certificate that will validate externally, since there's no common name to compare it to.
Right.
Let me ask a question then. Let me ask maybe it's a bit of a beginner question. Very probably is. One of the things is that you say that we need to encrypt wireless, but on the internet we don't. So for general purpose internet access. So I'm in a hotel, I don't have encrypted access. The only thing I have is a portal, so to make sure that I'm permitted to have, I'm authorized to use the line, but I don't have any encryption on my that to the internet. So why have encryption on wireless in that framework? Why not just have secure applications?
Well, because a layer two, you still have, you open yourself up to attacks in the nearby vicinity then. And whereas if you can at least have a secure wireless link, then you're at least getting it into the backhaul network where then the application security can take a look over. Because there's injection attacks and all sorts of things that can happen just with the direct wireless link itself. It doesn't solve everything, but it helps.
Arguably, you're no more secure on an unencrypted wired network either if they use cheap equipment that doesn't have user separation, or you know, if they just don't even use switches, you're just as bad from anyone else in the hotel.
So it's layer 2 security, not application security per se.
Right.
Yeah, and what's the, you know, the fundamental thing with security? Security in layers, right? So Wi-Fi security is one layer, application security is another layer, VPNs, you know, everything needs to be done, and that's the problem with security, is it's complex to tie everything together to get them all work in a cohesive fashion to have some sort of you know, security that actually works.
Yeah, it's a little depressing, actually, because you talk to... Wireless is seemingly simple, especially to set up, but then getting it right gets very complicated. Troubleshooting it is extremely complicated. And to try and capture those points for senior management when they ask you to put in a wireless network can get very challenging. I mean, Andrew, you and Blake must have to deal with this all the time.
With wireless security and how frustrating it is?
Or just dealing with senior management, trying to, or any management, trying to communicate, you know, why you need to do things a certain way. And, I mean, frankly, you know, you start talking about 802.1x and EAP methods, and you try and communicate this to senior management, and they're just like, EAP schmeep. You know, I don't understand. Why is this complicated? Can't you just throw up an access point? What is all this stuff? And then you're trying, then you have to go through the EAP methods to find the one that supports as many of your devices as possible. And going through that is like, oh man, so EAP TLS, oh, that's certificates, both sides. EAP TTLS, oh wait, does Microsoft support that yet? Okay, XP doesn't. Then I got, so, okay, any XP people are out. What about Windows 7? Does it support TTLS? Oh, no, I need a supplicant. Oh, a supplicant. Oh, my God. An external supplicant. You know, it's just...
Yep.
What I've seen from an enterprise standpoint more so is senior management really doesn't care about all that. They say engineers figure it out, make it work. But what they do care about is the added cost and complexity and almost the dichotomy of we want a high-performance wireless network, but when you put in this complexity with security with 802.1x and radio servers, I mean, when 802.1x first came out for Wi-Fi back in, 2005, 2004 time frame, it had a substantial hit on performance. How long has fast roaming been a problem in the industry? Forever. And so now when they say, well, why does this device fall off the network when it's in a warehouse and going at 30 miles an hour? You say, well, because we put in security. Which one do you want, security or performance? And so that's how it more translates to senior management, I think.
Well, and then the
other thing is the other thing is that senior management, they'll latch onto a buzzword. So, or they'll latch onto something that they're getting nailed on. So if they're doing a PKI, not PKI, PKI is what I'm trying to get to. If they're doing a PCI, payment card verification test, and or the audit, and they go through and they look, okay, I've got that evil web network, I got to get off of that, and the number one choice is I want to go to certificates, they'll just say, we want a certificate network. And then you start talking to them about what it's going to cost to do that, and you start getting down to it. Do you have a CA? Do you have the PKI infrastructure in your Microsoft environment today, et cetera, et cetera? And they're all like, no, so what's it going to cost us? And you start going down to it. Then, yeah, they start backing off. But they do. They tell engineers, figure it out the least cost way. Whatever's going to be the cheapest method of doing it, do it and get it done. And it's a very good point, Michelle, about trying to create these matrices of devices and what they support. And that's where we're getting at with some of the other back-end tools now for the device management. How can we, you know, have a single network but then support multiple authentication types and put them onto different VLANs or put them onto different ACLs, et cetera?
So what do you guys, for the most support...
PEEP, I think, is the number one probably that I've ever seen out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards myself. I'm finding that PEEP seems to be, PEEP MSChat V2 seems to be the most supportable out there. Is that, Thomas, Mike, does that make you happy or sad when I say PEEP MSJAB V2.
Before you launch into that discussion, let me just point something out here. So, one of the things is that we often have to build around Windows XP. And one of the points I want to make about Windows XP is that we've still, 10 years after it was released, Windows XP is still what's on corporate desktops. Because management, the leadership of the engineering teams have not...
Here it comes.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say, be prepared for the Greg rant right now. Go ahead, Greg.
We have Windows XP because managers have decided not to implement upgrades. Even though Windows Vista, God bless its sad little soul, and Windows 7 have all the tools in it to actually support all the advanced wireless. But our managers have decided to abrogate their responsibility to keep maintaining the fleet, the computing fleet. And then we have to put these terrible bodges. Like, the only way wireless authentication will ever, or wireless encryption, you know, EAP, PEEP, and TIA, all these new standards that we've invented dozens of them in the last decade, but none of them work because no manager, no leadership, none of our business leadership will grab a hold of the problem and say, we need to upgrade our desktop fleet.
Well, and Greg, more so than that.
When I sit in a meeting, time considering about upgrading your... You know, you cannot continue to abrogate your responsibility, and they say, well, that's just a technology problem, go and fix it. It's not, it's a business problem. The fact that the Windows XP has not been upgraded in a decade is a fact that they made a poor vendor choice. They chose a business partner who's a bunch of tools. And secondly, they made the choice not to spend money and continue to invest in their asset. So, all these discussions about, you know, fixing things with nasty hacks and works around is a management failure, in my opinion.
Greg, and what I was going to say is that IT organizations, the management in IT organizations, have built these humongous frameworks for administering their environment, and that's made them rigid. They can't be flexible and adopt new things that make sense for the business. I don't know. I think there's a fundamental failure out there for a lot of organizations that run the IT department in too rigid of a fashion, and I think that hits home with the same thing that you're saying, if I'm understanding you correct.
I think it's a lack of responsiveness. I would agree with that. That's fair.
Also, I was thinking that you're lucky if the biggest problem device on a wireless network you have to address is a Windows machine.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
So is that we got to a point 10 years ago when Windows XP was good enough, and then our management decided not to continue to invest in their fixed fleet. It's like taking a building and saying, I'm not going to fix my air conditioning for the next decade.
Well, you know what the problem is? What happens with when you switch from Windows XP to Vista and Windows 7, all of a sudden you make a choice about whether or not you're going to give full administrative rights to people anymore. And I know a lot of organizations that will fight, members of the organization will, really fight against Windows Vista and 7 because they know they're going to lose their administrative rights. They're like, nope, I'm not upgrading. And,
that's all just business problems, right?
Right, it is. Fair enough.
They're just business problems. That's not a technology problem. We don't drive around in cars from 1985 because they're not efficient, they cost expensive, they're not reliable, you can't get parts for them. But why is it perfectly acceptable to have Windows XP on a corporate desktop and say, oh, that's just a technical problem?
So, Mike, you were saying that the worst problem isn't Windows XP. What other devices do you find fun to see?
I was going to say, you've also got the problem of an existing hardware install of, say, embedded devices that cannot be upgraded without wholesale replacement. For example, point-of-sale systems, cash registers, barcode readers.
IV pumps.
IV pumps, as we unfortunately mentioned at the beginning. All these things where, RC4, the encryption behind WEP, is really cheap. Like, you generate the key stream and it's almost free to do WEP. But all of a sudden now you want to move to a proper security model. How do you go to an IV pump and install a certificate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's things like that will also prevent certain customers from ever considering going beyond that level. And so you can encourage them to have multiple networks, Okay, put all your XP machines, on a WPA network. Leave your IV pumps on a WEP network. But then, okay, so if I'm trying to steal patient records, that's good. If I'm trying to do something horrible with an IV pump, that's still terrible.
Yeah, I see that especially in the payment industry, where they get the customers just don't want to switch because and I don't know, is it the vendor's fault who makes the equipment that they don't make it easy enough? Because sometimes these guys are like, it's a mom pop shop or something, and they don't, we can't even get people sometimes to switch from, we have to put in really complicated VPN solutions in place because somebody doesn't want to switch a piece of equipment from FTP to a more secure transfer protocol. I mean, I think half of it. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, I think it's like Greg says, where it's a business decision where you have to choose to invest in the future of the technology you buy. You can't just buy something and then 10 years later complain that it isn't as good anymore. I mean, 10 years ago, they couldn't fit an EAP supplicant and everything into a barcode scanner. Today, yeah, that's easy. I mean, you could fit a PC into a barcode scanner, but 10 years ago, you couldn't. So if you're going to fix that, you need to prepare to have the outlay.
Yeah, but for a pop and mom shop, that's expensive. And they don't know anything about technology, so...
Well, they don't know to push back with their vendors, and they don't know how to choose the right equipment. I mean, they're basically still kind of uninformed about, they don't know when they're going out to say, oh, I don't know which device to buy, who to go with. They don't know to say, what, you're doing WEP? No, I don't want your device. It's hard. I mean, how do we? It's this ease of use versus again security that Blake mentioned earlier. How do you get that? I mean, so just a question: MS Chat V2, is that the one? Is that pretty much this? Is that what everybody's deploying out there? Or
it's definitely one of the more common ones I've ever seen.
Yeah,
seems to support the most. With the exception of, I think maybe not Nokia Symbian and a lot of those devices, and maybe BlackBerry might have had a problem with that. I don't remember. I was talking to a friend about it. In a perfect world, which one would you deploy? I said to him, and he said, "Oh, definitely EAP MS Chat V2."
If you configure it correctly, and if you configure all your clients correctly, there's nothing wrong with it.
If you let a user about the size of the Empire State Building, there a big if.
Yeah. capital IF. Subtext: you won't. if you let a user ever get a prompt that says, do you trust this? You've lost.
So does anybody think that it's acceptable anymore in enterprise wireless deployments to use VPN to attach, to get out to the internet from a wireless infrastructure? I mean, a lot of organizations use that, say, 5 or 6 years ago. But I know security teams that are actually still recommending that. I don't think it's the right way to do it because you've added another layer of complexity. You've added a choke point that you may have in addition to a controller already. So what a nightmare. And you're still open to the VPN. So what do you guys think?
Michelle, can I clarify? Are you asking for internal enterprise networks or broader for like including hotspots and things like that? Because I think there's two different...
Internal enterprise networks.
I would say absolutely not. You should spend the time and investment in getting Wi-Fi right with WPA2 enterprise security.
Correct. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is, so if you're using things like Cisco with the ASA product, you could certainly do an AnyConnect on demand, so it's automatically going to fire that VPN. But why would I ask an internal resource that connecting to a wireless network to have to launch a secondary transport method to get myself onto the internal resources? I should be trusting them already, because I'm doing, like Andrew said, a secure network. I already have that trust there. I know that they're using encryption. I know that they are who they are, or at least they say they are who they are, and I have to have a level of trust there.
Well, and then you have to worry about if you're doing a captive portal or something, or you say you're using an SSL VPN. So now I got to have a DNS and DHCP full infrastructure in place to then support them to get them there. There are just so many extras in place when you have to do it that way. It was great when you didn't have other options, you know, 5-6 years ago. But anymore, no, I find it painful. Anybody else? I mean, are people still asking to set things up that way? Do you still get requests for that?
I haven't in a very long time.
I come across it rarely.
Yeah.
The only other benefit to doing that is if you have policies in place for devices you can't... Either you don't trust or you can't otherwise provision, but you can get a VPN client on. The number of them is decreasing.
Yeah, that was painful for us. I remember the EDU where I worked, it got out that we had banned iPads, and the problem wasn't... And we hadn't banned iPads. The problem was people used VPN to get onto the wireless to get out from the wireless network. We used private IP space, you know, and then you connect to the VPN and get out. So there was no wireless client on VPN client on the iPad at that time, and they couldn't get out. It just didn't work.
Yeah, the EDU I used to work for, I believe, still uses that implementation where it's an open network and then VPN to get out, and if your device can't do it, too bad. Except if your device can't do it and they like your device type, they just let you go out on the network open.
Ew, ew.
And bypass the VPN requirement entirely.
Oh, that's too
bad.
What's
the point of the VPN then?
It's more secure, don't you know?
Yeah, right.
You're doing something.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing something. Yeah.
This is a security podcast, folks. We're building barriers. Just remember that. Building barriers.
That's right. Barriers is what it's all about. Perception.
Make them feel pain. Yes.
It's about reality.
So let's talk about rogues. That's always the big discussion. And, you know, every vendor says they have rogue detection, but that's really kind of an illusion to a certain degree.
Michelle, can I just preempt this conversation and say, this is a wired network problem? Go fix it, switch guys.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, we're trying to fix something that fundamentally is from a wireless access point perspective, we can't fix. We can try to, you know, give you insight into what we can correlate going on, but most of these attempts are still, at best, a guess whether or not it's plugged into your network or not. Sometimes you can, you know, I mean, there's ways to do it, but there's always ways of subverting it. I mean, and fundamentally, the switch guys just need to step up and say, we need to scare our switch ports.
Exactly. It's like we talked about, Michelle, in previous podcasts as well, is that security on a wireless network is by far higher than the security on a port. So, of course, somebody's going to go to Best Buy or wherever and plug in a Linksys AP, because they can. It's easy to do.
I mean, that's the problem I've found. I think 802.1x, the benefit of implementing it on your wireless network is that you then have an in to get it on your wired network. And the reason why you can't start on the wired network with 802.1x is because you've got to have that inventory of devices so that you can make the exceptions, you know, the printers, things that you can't really, easily put certificates on, or, you know, have an EAP method configured. But, you know, it's at least you get a foot in the door, you can set up a mindset for that, and then, you know, get an in. But rogue detection, you know, I love how a lot of vendors promote their rogue detection when in actuality it's just, really? No, that's... You're going to catch the easy stuff, and I'm going to get more false positives and alerts that are actually that aren't useful than I am actually going to mitigate anything here.
I kind of think of rogues in the same category as how I think of denial of service attacks. It's nice to know it's going on, but there's not a lot you can do about it.
Well, and then if you're in a congested urban area, you're going to...
Oh, yeah.
I know where I worked before, we turned it off because... Good grief, you're a city university, you're going to pick up everybody.
Also, I mean, rogue detection, as you said, you're getting the low-hanging fruit. But if someone really wants to get ingress into your network over wireless, I'll go out and buy you know, one of the Ubiquiti network frequency shifted cards that drops it down to 900 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw that in an access point and throw it, you know, in a cubicle. And your rogue detection's never going to see that.
Great.
Or their public safety network cards. And that's even without leaving 802.11 LAN. You know, there's Bluetooth access point style devices. There's, you know, super low bandwidth Zigbee stuff. There's any number of things that you're never going to see if they're plugged into your network and you haven't secured your switch ports.
And then I've bridged into the wired network.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I was being a little facetious when I said, you know, throw it over the fence and give it to the switch guys, because they have a lot of other problems to deal with, like you said, Michelle, with those legacy devices. So it's not a simple matter of flipping on 802.1x. And, you know, I had a war story with trying to do that in my previous role. And, man, you just end up running into so many exceptions that by the time you end up doing it, you've got exceptions left and right. And it's just where you were when you began with. There's no security on the port.
Well, it's still better than NAC, though. Oh, my God.
Really? You just went to NAC?
No, I said... Well, because it's, you know, at least I always called... I mean, vendors come in and they'll say NAC, and the way I used to bait them was I'd say, NAC? Is that just the ghetto 802.1x? They just look at me.
Well, that's... I mean, part of what you're talking about there is why controllers were invented, because they actually solve part of the security problem. Well, they're often a good enough security solution compared to the alternatives. Like, trying to set up, you know, proper security is still pretty difficult.
Well, I mean, are you talking SDN now, or...?
No, I'm talking about wireless LAN controllers. Part of wireless LAN controllers was that your traffic terminates in a given part of your network. You don't have a layer 2 problem because you can actually just control it because it all terminates in a single point.
I disagree. There was 802.1x on autonomous APs, and it had no problems with that.
No, I have. I can't implement 802.1x because none of the operating systems support it. Well, Windows XP, so therefore none.
Uh-oh. We don't want another Greg rant. Be careful, guys.
it's like, seriously, in the last 10 years I've had several goes at implementing wireless and always found it on the realities of Windows XP.
I know.
It's a good day if I can avoid a Windows XP box.
Yeah. Yes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
When you're working in a fleet that's got, you know, 10,000, you know, Windows XP desktops, and then after 5 years of solid effort, they finally got them stable and robust. Nobody wants to change them. The fact that they're using an obsolete platform actually hasn't occurred to them. You know, the problem is that you've actually got a substandard, you know, operating system, and that's why it took you 5 years to make it work. It's not a reason to leave it alone anymore. Sorry, I'm getting back on my high horse again. I'm replaying the arguments I had the other day when I was, you know, they said, well, Windows XP, it took us 5 years to make it stable. I'm going, well, yeah, it is. It's because it's so bad.
Our work here is done.
Getting it stable is not a feature. While it's a significant feat, what you really should have done is gotten something a little more modern with...
Well, Greg, come on, let's give him a break, because you know what? It took 500 years to finish the Milan Duomo, the cathedral in Milan. It took him 500 years!
But, you know, they had hammers and chisels. They didn't have backhoes and cranes either.
So maybe it'll only take 50?
You know, whatever.
Well, Craig, isn't developing for a Windows platform like a hammer and a chisel?
I was just going to suggest combining Windows XP with a hammer.
Yeah, we're talking.
Win hammer.
So that kind of leads into the next question I have. So, and it's kind of interesting because you guys are kind of on the both sides, Mike and Thomas, with regards to WIPs and WIDs. And, you know...
Actually, I think Thomas and I get along more than you'd guess about this, because he's working on another WIPS implementation as well.
Right. Yeah, Thomas, you have open WIPS. Where are you with that right now?
I kind of slowed down with it. I got busy with other things. But I will start working again on it in a couple of weeks. I actually make another release.
So, I mean, is it a waste of money? I mean, there are companies that sell overlay systems which is a separate dedicated WIDS WIPS, and then there are the integrated ones. There are the hybrid systems. I mean, so do you think it's ever worthwhile anybody to buy an overlay system anymore?
They're still buying it.
Yeah, the DoD. Yeah.
I've done training like 2 weeks ago at a convention, DerbyCon.
Yeah.
And it was that one guy that told me that his company or another company they're working for is going to spend like $250,000 on WIPS.
Really? Which? Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So wow. It's still a pretty interesting market.
I mean, do you ever recommend it, Blake? Blake, Andrew, do you ever recommend an overlay system?
It's an interesting subject because why would I do an overlay if I can do it with, you know, from my standpoint of deploying Cisco products, you can do WIPS with the adaptive WIPS using Cisco monitor mode radio, so it's kind of those things, but there are things like Andrew? Yeah, exactly.
Air defense, airtight, air something.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of customers will actually have that already decided on what they want to do because their security departments, which are sometimes separate than their wireless network team, they've already said, if you want to do wireless, you got to have this in. So they've already decided, okay, you got to put this in. So it's not really much of a discussion. It's more of a, just tack this into your design. Tell us where to put sensors.
Here's my feeling on this, and maybe it's a general statement of my feeling on WIPS in general, which actually it is that layer 2 and layer 1 attacks are fairly uninteresting to me. If I've got a properly secured infrastructure, the only thing I'm worried about from a WIP standpoint is monitoring the clients, because I think a lot of the focus now shifts to clients and protecting the clients. And so from an infrastructure standpoint, I'm not really all that interested in WIPs unless it helps me monitor the clients. And then in those cases, I think I need to be managing and monitoring every channel on my network.
I definitely agree with that.
So you think it's, because the hybrid models, it's time slicing. So you're okay with that? You're okay with a hybrid model as long as you've done your best to secure layer 1 and layer 2?
I guess it depends on my comfort level and how I've secured the clients. So what clients am I supporting? Are they managed by the corporation where we can, you know, push policy and make sure they verify certificates and all the, you know, all the dotting your I's and crossing your T's on all the client-side security? If I'm worried about personal devices or some other devices that maybe I'm not managing, then it becomes, I think, more important for me to have WIPs to monitor attacks against clients. And for that, time slicing, I mean, I think time slicing fits one need for, like, identifying rogues, finding them, trying to do your best from an infrastructure standpoint. But if you need to monitor clients, that's where I'm a big proponent of overlay, because they have, or dedicated sensors in general, even if they're from a vendor.
Okay. So what's your experience with... I'm personally not very impressed with the quality of a lot of the hybrid WIPs and WIDS systems. Oh, you're laughing.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. People testing a specific brand, well-known, and told me they're just not good. They just monitor what's going on, and that's it.
I find a lot of false positives with them. I don't, and then you'll, I'm gonna not mention the name of the big vendor who came in and talked to me about it, and it seems like they're not, the sales staff and even the product manager staff aren't very knowledgeable about common attacks out there. And so you'll ask them questions and they can't really, I don't know, what attacks do we mitigate? I don't know.
It's in the documentation.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is reliably detecting attack. I mean, I've tested multiple different WIP systems, and, you know, sometimes it'll trigger a signature and sometimes it won't. It's the same attack that you're doing, and it's like the reliability of WIPs in general. I'm getting on my high horse, Greg, but I'm not a big fan of WIPs in general. I would rather deploy a wired IPS system that's looking deeper into packets at the application layer to detect attacks occurring across my network rather than a wireless IPS, which is focused solely on layer 1 and layer 2.
Yeah, well, except focused on attack detection so that you can react. But what are you going to react with?
A crowbar.
Yeah, I mean, physically you're going to have to send somebody out with, you know, a physical security guard, you know, somebody who's got a legal authority to give people a cease and desist.
Eh, no, we just put on auto containments and start containing some DAuth packets. It's okay.
I know.
So that leads into another thing with management frame protection that I think we had on our agenda for today. And you know, one of the things that I see with that is the impact to WIP systems to be able to automatically mitigate some signatures when they're fired, right? For, or rogue, can you deauthenticate it? Well, with management frame protection, no anymore.
Yikes.
Yeah, we're always going to be playing this catch-22 and keep one thing's going to do good for us and then it's going to kill another system. It's we're always going to be fighting this battle.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It feels like with wireless. Well, it seems in comparison to wired, we gained a lot of traction with wired, but then in wireless, it feels like you're always, you know, you get a handle on one thing and then you lose somewhere else. It's a very frustrating medium, I find, to work with.
Can't those just attackers just stop working on stuff for a while?
Yeah, give us a break. Yeah, yeah. So there was recently a lot of controversy about, was it Marlin Spike who came out with the MSChat V2 cracking?
Moxie Marlin Spike, yeah.
Moxie Marlin Spike, sorry. What a name.
He's done some impressive work.
But I know Andrew, you came out, wasn't it Andrew who came out with the blog post about that?
Yeah, I got pretty pissed off about how the media was spinning it as WPA2 is broken and, you know, all your enterprise wireless networks are vulnerable. And I'm like, man, there's an outer and inner tunnel with, you know, peep authentication, for instance, and, you know, they crack the inner one, but you can't get to the inner one if the outer one's done correctly. So, you know, it's like one of those things where if you've done your due diligence, you're fine. And I had a problem with how the media, you know, presented that attack.
You mean the sky's not falling?
No, the media never blows anything out of proportion. No.
You're right.
I haven't learned to stop caring about the media yet. It's one of my fatal flaws. I keep reading them and just reacting with gut emotion, and it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, for that attack to work, it means your client already has to trust a bogus radio certificate, and if you let it get that far, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, that was the key, and that's where I think, you know, in discussions with a friend of mine from my former job, we were really leaning towards self-signed certs for that reason. And you got to have device management. You really have to have things a tight hold on your environment and on your clients, especially so that you know, because you're right. Once they if you put on a bogus cert, then it's game over.
That said, this attack probably works way more of the time than we ever want to admit, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people are not correctly configured.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. Let's talk about some of the things that the right way to do, what people are doing wrong out there in terms of wireless security when they're setting it up, and what are the recommendations, what they should be doing properly. Let's start with number one for everybody, what everybody thinks the biggest one is.
Why did you use wireless in the first place?
Oh,
that's right. Nobody should use wireless. Put wires in everywhere. We're done here.
Wait. Well, I think we need to take back up a step here. Why do I need a computer? Can't I just use a pad of paper?
He's got a point. Excellent.
No, seriously, guys, really. What's the big number one for everybody?
I mean, that's a tough question because there's a lot of depends on that one. You know, you have to look at what they're trying to do on the wireless.
Just a simple enterprise.
And what their audience is.
Okay, you walk into an enterprise. Maybe it's a law office. Thomas, I hear him giggling in the back. He's so happy, you know. Nobody would ever know to meet him that he's actually as naughty as he is.
First of all, nobody just walks into a law office and wants to put wireless in because they don't want to get sued for doing something wrong.
But law offices have wireless.
Oh, they definitely do.
Yeah, so what are some of the first steps that you would recommend in terms of doing wireless right in a law, say a law firm?
Get a good IT guy or hire somebody good.
It's their IT department.
Okay. Oh, I'm serious. I mean, a lot of people just have small IT departments and they frankly don't know what they're doing, or they fail to hire a professional to do a wireless install, and so they rely on people that, hey, here's the desktop technician, can you put wireless in for us, because that's our next thing, right? And the people doing the design and the install, you know, for a lot of cases, don't know how to do it properly.
Yeah, I totally agree, and you can take that even one step further, is that if you're outsourcing it to a partner to put in the wireless, you still need a good internal IT support person, because the wireless network is going to be seen as a failure if you can't get the clients to connect properly, if you don't do it right with deploying whatever connection methods via a group policy object or whatever other tools you use.
I'd even go so far as to say for a really small deploy, like if it was, you know, a 10-person office, something like PSK, provided you don't tell the users what the PSK is, you go and configure their machines, and don't let them share it with whoever walks in, something like WPA2PSK might be completely reasonable. And there's some wireless vendors that even let you do per-user PSK, so you give each system its own PSK, so that if they do figure out a way to get it out of there, they can't, you know, do too much damage giving it to other people if you limit it to one MAC address. Just because in such a small shop, you're not going to have a guy who can properly set up.
Well, I think
properly set up a full PKI infrastructure and everything.
Yeah, Mike, that highlights one of the biggest things that I talk with people all the time, is they're fearful of the complexities around 802.1x. They don't understand it. And that leads them down the path of lower security mechanisms. And so that, I think, you know, making wireless easier to use and easier to set up is something that I think the industry needs to tackle. And until we do, there's going to be a lot of confusion out there from a customer perspective as to what they should do and what they should use. It's just not intuitive.
Is the problem, though, more the client and the support on the clients? I mean, that's, you know, trying to, I actually had to look up how to configure 802.1x on Windows, because on Mac it's pretty easy, although they did this really strange thing where they took out the ability to directly configure 802.1x in Mountain Lion and Lion, and you have to use the developer kit to create the config. It was very annoying.
Oh, isn't that frustrating?
Yeah, I'm like, what were you guys thinking? You know? But at least it's still relatively painless once you do that on a Mac. It's still not horrible. On Windows, it's just, oh my God, what? You know, are they just not taking its wireless serious yet? They think they don't need to make it easier? I don't get it.
I just think it's, you look at wireless, it's not like it's one standard. Yeah, there's 802.11, but it interfaces with so many other protocols and specifications that there's all of these gaps in interpretation that just bring about a lot of complexity to tie everything together. And that's the biggest thing that I find is the integration side of it is the most challenging part of how do I tie wireless to Radius? How do I tie Radius to directory? How do I, you know, get the clients to, you know, push out certificates and validate them? And there's just all these little kinks in the chain, and anywhere along the path, you can get stumbled.
So basically, I think in 90% of the cases, we don't like open. We are recommending Radius and 802.1x if you can deal with it. If, you know, as a fallback, okay, PSK, WEP, bad, very, very bad. We will mock you if we find out that you're using WEP and hack your network. Mike and Thomas will show up at your door.
And you will point and laugh.
Oh, yeah, okay, then you get to mock everybody. Yeah, in person, so. And then some kind of, you want to have some layer 1-2 control from your network team. You also want to have some kind of client control as well. Is that is that a fair kind of overview of what we need to be doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can't control what your clients do, then you're going to have a bad time.
So, how are you guys, Blake, Andrew? What do you recommend for mobile device management, for client control in that sense, for pushing out configs? What have you seen used?
Well, I think we have two fundamental scenarios. I mean, I've seen a lot of pushback on the whole personal device side of the house, where people don't want anything installed on their personal device by an enterprise because they have personal data on there. I just was reading an article earlier this week that there's medical data and medical applications you can use now to store your records and things like that on your mobile device and retrieve them and look them up. And would you want, you know, your enterprise to have any semblance of view into that? And so what I've seen is a big no. And so having any control over personal devices becomes very, very challenging from a perception standpoint. Whereas if it's a corporate-issued mobile device, I think you're off in a completely different realm. You can put MDM agents on there. You can control the build and the install of that device and the software on it just like you would a corporate laptop or something.
Right. What do people use on corporate laptops? Do you use endpoint security protection? What do you guys use? What have you seen out in the field?
Bloatware.
Bloatware is right. That's fair enough.
Bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we used to put them on servers in the old days, and we stopped doing it because the endpoint security was so bad that your servers would actually be unreliable and unstable. And so then we just continued to put it on desktops because... because if it failed on servers, it must be okay on desktops.
Yeah, but now it's coming back again with some of the VMware security stuff.
Yeah, actually not going into the operating system, so we're not installing agents in Linux or Windows where the driver, like, the software quality of Linux and Windows is so bad that you can't really install drivers in there and trust it and feel it's reliable. So putting things in the hypervisor stack underneath, it's fundamentally back to network security. Putting agents into the hypervisor in the network driver is actually quite a realistic one because the software quality of the VMware hypervisor is much higher. It's also a much tighter controlled environment, but certainly the software is of a higher quality than Windows or Linux.
You know what I really like is what Apple did with their, I believe it was Lion and Mountain Lion, with the software signatures, and you have, you know, you can ratchet it up so that only applications signed by like Apple can be installed and things like that. I think that's a move in the right direction where it's simpler than all this bloatware that gets installed on Windows PCs, yet it provides some semblance of verification that code base that you're installing has been looked at and has passed some muster, right?
Really, Gatekeeper, that was the first thing I disabled. I hate it.
As a corporate organization, it's quite good because there's some hope in the long term. Well, Microsoft's talking about delivering it as part of Windows 8, that only signed software will be able to be installed, and part of that signing is a corporate entity will be able to sign software, and any software that's not signed by, you know, their own certificate won't be run on the machine. That's a feature, right? Because then people, you can give them administrator rights, but they still can't install software.
Well, it's really depressing because you know that you've got to have control over the client to control the wireless network, but it's so difficult to get that control.
And for personal devices, I think, you know, it's all around the onboarding process, right?
Right.
Because typically you're not going to be issuing them these devices. They're going to come into the network. They're going to pop open their list and they're going to say, ooh, SSID is corporate XYZ. That should be the one I connect to. And it's what happens after they try to connect to it that determines whether this is going to be a success or a failure. So having a good method for device onboarding and delivering that at least wireless configuration component and pieces to them automatically, I think is where the key is.
Okay, I think we can wrap it up now. It sounds like we've beat up Microsoft enough. I didn't manage, however, to say WAP 10 times as I promised, but everybody take a drink because I just said it again. Thanks for listening. As you exit Healthy Paranoia, drive safely and watch out for any flying packets. I hope you can follow us on at Packet Pushers on Twitter, or hang out with the listeners on IRC at Freenode. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers Borg Collective. Subscribe to our RSS feeds and donate to the show because resistance is futile. Email your comments or questions about the show to packetpushers@gmail.com or healthyparanoia@packetpushers.net. And remember, it's healthy paranoia because sometimes they really are out to get you.